Well, hey ho, everybody. Look, I just have very large lungs. I thought we went over this last time. Did we not have that conversation?
Never gets old. Never gets old. I demand a photo.
All right, I will get you my most recent lung x-ray.
I want to see it.
And other things. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl.
Oh, hi, I'm Molly Wood. Welcome to Make Me Smart, the podcast already in progress about tech, the economy, culture, and lung size.
Lung size. Now I have to go to my doctor, actually, and get my lung x-ray.
I mean, I want to know. And then I'm going to need a quarter in there for comparison, or maybe like an iPhone. Can they do that? Just put one in?
I honestly don't know.
I'm sure machine learning can handle that.
Yes, somehow. So look, I don't know what any of that has to do with what we're going to talk about today, but what we're going to talk about today is taxes, of which I have not yet done mine. You, Ms. Wood?
I started, and it was
really?
Such bad news that I stopped.
Well, wait. Like, how do you know it was bad
news? I don't
want
to do it.
Do you do your own?
Yeah, I just do TurboTax.
It's
easy for me. And me and TurboTax are homies. We go way back. And so it knows all about me. And it's, you know, it's like, oh, are you still at this and that? And let me just get all the things. And then
so
it gives me like a upfront estimate. And since I know that the deduction situation is not going to help me at all,
yeah.
I literally like a child, I just closed the lid of the laptop and I went and got some candy.
There you go.
Because
TurboTax is why I don't actually do my own taxes anymore. So, and I've talked about this before, I think, or threatened to tell this anecdote. So it must have been, I don't think we had kids yet. Maybe we only had one or two kids. But anyway, so we used to do TurboTax, my wife and I. And one year we were sitting down there and we were clicking through the, you know, the questions and the prompts and this is and the that's. And then it said, are you subject to the alternative minimum tax? And I, who had the cursor, I had the mouse in my hand, I clicked on no. And my wife said, what do you mean no? How do you know we're not subject to the alternative minimum tax? And I said, I don't know, but I just don't want to be subject to it. So I clicked on no. And her head exploded.
Yeah.
Her head, and it was because she's one of these people has to know why something happens and how it works and what the logic is behind it and the numbers. And I'm like, no, I just know. So the next year we went to an accountant. And ever since then, I've just taken a shoebox full of receipts to my accountant and gone, here. And I'm doing that on this coming Thursday. So I don't actually
I
even
sort of
know
feel
what it's
like
going to be like.
It's funny because our nice little rundown says, like, what's your routine? And tell us about the rituals. And I feel like I shouldn't say anything else because I risk being audited by my own. I trust TurboTax for all what you said,
possible.
TurboTax, that seems fine.
Entirely possible. Was that your phone ringing there? That's your accountant. That's the IRS on the phone. Is that what we just heard right there?
I'm back. It's someone spam calling my ISDN, which is a super fun home studio situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so look, here's why we're talking about taxes. First of all, because it's taxes, but also this is the first filing season, as hopefully everybody who listens to Marketplace knows, the first filing season after the big tax bill of a year ago. Huge changes, cuts in the corporate tax rate, changes to individual deductions. I mean, all kinds of things. So we're going to talk about that for a little while today.
We are. And we're going to talk about sort of, you know, now that it is nigh on upon us and some of us have had moments of unexpected horror and others have not. We kind of want to get into the details of the impact compared to some feelings and fears now that things are getting a little more real. First, though, this is like becoming our new tradition. Shara Morris went into the field. She loves to go on field trips and take her little recorder and talk to humans, which is so awesome. So she brought us this snapshot on the ground. Every year, the IRS runs these free workshops to help you do your taxes all around the country. And it's called the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program. I can imagine it was in a lot of demand this year. So Shara went to one of the sessions at the Arroyo Seco Library branch in LA, and people were there to get help. She talked to Christine Klusman, who was there to volunteer. She's an accounting professor. And she told Shara she heard one comment a whole lot of times this year.
Well, a lot of people are saying that they're not getting as much back, but I have to remind them that they had a lot less taken out. So they're getting a lot less back because they had the less amount refunded. And they said, I said, well, wouldn't you rather get it during the month than give it to the federal government to play with and you would get a big refund? And most of them agreed that they want more during the month.
Yeah, except the catch is that some huge portion of taxpayers in this economy count on the refund to finance things they've been paying for, like washing machines or repairs of the house and all that jazz. And because, you know, humans are bad savers and the IRS kind of forces you to when you pay too much. They hold on your money for a year. And that's sort of what people use, you know?
This is like one of those things that accountants and financial advisors say, which is like, because of the time value of money and the things, and it's better to have it in your pocket. It's like, no, it's really not. Because then if you, you know, for people who live month to month, which is most Americans, when you feel like, oh, okay, well, I had an extra $100 a month to quote unquote play with, and now I owe $3,000. Like, it feels like cold comfort,
totally,
if you will.
The catch is, of course, that this tax law affects not just taxpayers, but accountants as well, like Christine. The tax law is 1,000-something pages long, and if accountants don't get it right, they actually run into professional troubles, and their clients run into monetary problems with the Internal Revenue Service. Here's what Christine said about that.
Yeah, there were a lot of changes that we had to realize, and some of them we didn't realize right at first until we're starting to prepare the taxes. Go, oh, yeah, that one. Because you, when you've done it so long, you have a certain route. And now I hate the form. You know, the postcard that they're supposed to have? They could have just put it on one page. I don't know why they wanted to do it. But, you know, that's what the new changes are. And you have to, if you're doing taxes, you have to be able to change.
Oh, yeah. And that postcard thing, let's not forget that taxes are a political instrument. That's the reality of it.
You know. Oh, yeah. Let's not forget that technologically speaking, there's no freaking reason we're doing our own taxes at all anyway.
I'm sorry. What have you? Who are you and what have you done with Molly Wood?
I'm fired up.
Okay. All right.
I'm heated.
Holy cow.
We would love to hear from you about what has changed with your taxes this year. Please email us at makemesmart@marketplace.org. What might feel different, even if your bottom line, like, you know, Christine said, is adding up mostly the same in the long run, which everybody hates when it comes to money. But we're going to dig into what people have been telling us already with Marketplace reporter Marielle Segarra. This is her beat. She has been steeped in the world of taxes. And we were so smart to create a beat at this exact moment, don't you think? Hi, Marielle.
Hi.
Yeah, good thinking.
I think so.
Good thinking.
Wasn't my idea, so I can't take credit. But
All right, that's true. So what do you think? You just heard from our volunteer accountants at the library. Does that jive with what you're hearing? How are people feeling from both the, you know, doing the taxes and the preparing side?
Yeah, it's something I've heard a lot. I mean, on the refund front, people were expecting to get smaller refunds this year because of the changes in the tax law. It's a little complicated, but people's tax liabilities went down. Most people got a tax cut. But at the same time, they're getting smaller refunds, which is a different thing, and people often conflate the two. But actually, a funny thing happened. Earlier in the season, people were getting smaller refunds. Refunds were down by a ton. And now it's sort of leveled out. Hmm. The refunds are, on average, are flat compared to last year. But even so, all the news coverage of smaller refunds has had a psychological impact, and fewer people have been filing their taxes as a result. We did a story on this recently. It was like, we noticed that, because the IRS puts out data on this every week, that 2 million fewer people had filed their taxes this year compared to the same time in last year. And when we talked to people and to accountants, they said, yeah, it's because we're scared, or we know we're going to owe money, so we're holding off.
So
funny,
yeah. So
but
so
sad.
Let's go back a little bit to 2017-ish, and to set the stage. Paul Ryan was still the Speaker of the House. Republicans had the House. The president was promising a tax bill. What was the driving motivation? What was the economic promise of this tax bill, I guess, when Republicans were driving it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, they said it would boost economic growth. They said that wages would go up. They also said that it would make the tax code and tax filing simpler. That was a big promise as well.
Has it done that? Are we there?
Yeah, I would say of all the promises,
you know,
that one seems like the farthest from the actual.
On the simplicity front, it's complicated, right? I feel like every time someone asks me a question about taxes, I answer with both and or it's complicated. But yeah, the simplicity part. So for a lot of individuals, there are some things that are simpler now. More people will be taking the standard deduction because it doesn't make sense to itemize anymore. The Congress got rid of a lot of the deductions people used to take at tax time or limited them. And so it doesn't make sense to itemize. You end up taking the standard deduction because Congress doubled that. And so that makes filing your taxes a little less complicated. But most people don't actually do their taxes the old-fashioned way. It was funny listening to you guys. I actually do my taxes on the paper forms and send them to the IRS.
You're like a throwback.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah, I get a stamp.
What are we missing? What should
them?
We know?
I just don't think it's that hard. And my mom taught me this way. So I didn't know any other way. But this year this is a tangent, but I also did it on TurboTax to compare. Oh. And I thought going through TurboTax, it took longer and was harder. It made it sort of feel, there were all these affirmations. They would say things like, you're doing great, keep going. Where I was done with my
taxes.
Like,
I don't need this.
You know. Yeah, I didn't feel like I needed that. If you have a simple tax situation, you don't actually really need TurboTax or an accountant. But most people, 90% of people use an accountant or some sort of software. And so any simplification, you know, they got rid of personal exemptions. So that's one less calculation on the form. The standard deduction went up, so more people are taking it. But if you're going to an accountant or using TurboTax, that stuff doesn't really matter to you.
Right.
It's like, it's simpler, but you're not really dealing with that.
Honestly, I would just assume the government send me a bill, honestly. Right. Because they've got all the information. Right. They know how much I make. They know what my investments are because the, you know, Fidelity and Vanguard send all those forms to the IRS. Right.
Yep.
And just send me a bill, man. Make it fair.
See, you laughed at me when I said that in a mad way. But that's exactly what I was saying. Like, it's just absurd.
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk about
that. I'm seeing the value
that,
in rational communication now. But right. That's a real, like, it only exists because of the, like, the Intuit lobby.
Well, yeah. So, but Mary, go ahead. Mm-hmm. You were going to say?
No, that's been a proposal for a while. And you're right, Molly, some of the tax prep companies lobbied against that. Obviously, you can imagine why. They say that they think that people should be allowed to do their own taxes because, you know, if you get a bill from the government, maybe you'll just assume that that's what it is and that there's no wiggle room on it. There are no other deductions you can take, whatever. Like, that's one argument for not having it just automated. But if it was automated like it is in a lot of countries, there wouldn't be any need for, you know, accountants in some cases and tax software in other cases.
So in theory, not to spend too much time on this idea, which does come from the place of rage with me, but in theory, if the tax code is indeed that much simpler, that all of these kind of deductions and loopholes don't apply to so many people anymore, doesn't that strengthen the argument in some ways that we could march toward just getting the bill?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that more people are 90% plus people are expected to take the standard deduction this year. Last year, it was like 3/4 of people. So that's more, definitely. I will say I sort of didn't put my caveat in there before that while some things are simpler, some things this law made way more complicated. You know, different rules for businesses. We've talked about the pass-through deduction, this like 20% tax break.
Yeah.
There's a ton of stuff that was added to the tax code. So I wouldn't say the tax code is any simpler now. I think it's more complicated.
Let me ask you, it will sound political, but it's really not. Has this tax cut, do we expect it to pay for itself as was promised?
None of the economists that I've talked to expect it to pay for itself. I think they say it may have boosted economic growth somewhat, but you can debate that back and forth. But to pay for itself, no.
Right, because it has to sustain that economic growth over the long term. And what we have here, to use the phrase, is the sugar high, right?
Yeah, and there's been, and the administration has pushed back against that. They say that you'll continue to see the impacts of this tax cut years later, as more companies invest in factories and those come online, and eventually workers' wages go up. But, you know, a lot of people don't think that's going to happen.
Hmm. With an attempt to acknowledge that this is the first year of this change, and change is always hard, and everybody has to learn a new system, is this disruptive? Like, is it something that there are going to be tweaks to? Are people talking about, okay, this is the way we should probably come at trying to fix what happened here, or you know, nibble around the edges at ways to make it better? Or is this probably the new reality?
I mean, there are a lot of things that members of Congress want to tweak about the tax law, but it's really hard to get any tweaks through. So, for instance, something as simple as a typo. There are a lot of typos in the law, as there are in many laws of this size. There were a bunch in the Affordable Care Act, too. But because Republicans want to fix some of those, but they can't get through a fix because Democrats won't get on board with that unless they get something mm-hmm. they want. Mm-hmm. So, and some of those typos can have a really big impact. There was one that, you know, retailers were supposed to be allowed to expense renovations on their stores in the first year that they made the renovations. And because of a typo, they have to do it over 39 years instead. And so we talked to a bunch of retailers who were holding off on renovations because of that. And they've been waiting for a fix for a while. It just hasn't come through.
So what's your biggest takeaway out of this tax bill? I mean, you've been covering this now for going on a year, right? Six, 8 months, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My biggest takeaway. I mean, I guess what I take a sort of psychological angle mm-hmm. here. What I took away was I learned a lot about how people feel about their taxes in general and their relationship to their taxes. So, and to their refunds, for instance. I think there's a big behavioral piece here. Even learning about how people file their taxes and how they're, even though this law made things simpler in terms of filing, it would make it easier to file, say, a 1040 form. Most people don't know how to do that. They never learned how. And they're afraid that, you know, an IRS agent is basically standing over their shoulder waiting for them to make a mistake. And so I think sometimes when you have a big change like this, it reveals things that always existed, this sort of psychology behind taxes and the way mm-hmm. Americans feel about them.
Great. Mariel Segura, Marketplace's tax time reporter. Well, all the time on taxes.
Mariel, thanks.
Mariel, thank you
really
so much.
It.
Thanks, yeah. guys.
See ya.
All right. Cool story, Mariel, but I'm still scared to finish my taxes.
I can't believe she does it on
because
paper.
Of
That's kind of wild.
Feelings. That is, I have so many questions about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I wouldn't even know how to get the paper. Like, that's how digital I've gone. And now I'm just...
I was just going to say, you go to the library and you pick up the tax forms. But there's got to be an online way to get your tax forms, right? You can just print the PDF of the 1040 or whatever.
I bet. Okay, now, am I such a nerd? I sort of want to do them both.
No.
And compare how long it took.
I mean, go ahead, but no.
A lot of things I say I want to do, I'm not going to do because life is life. Just to be clear.
Fair enough.
Email us your thoughts on your taxes, of course, how the tax laws affected you. I want to hear from you if you're a business. I think that's super interesting. Yep. I think that some of those, you know, we focus so much on our households, but I think for small businesses and individual contractors mm-hmm. who were trying to decide if they should incorporate, there's some really interesting stuff in there. And we'd love to get some voice memos. Make me smart at marketplace.org. It's a mess. All right. Time for a break. And then what's on our minds?
Oh my goodness, we're back. I don't know how it happened, but we're back.
Do, 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 do.
Well, I know exactly how it happened. I started talking. That's how we came back.
I also know how it happened. Fascinating.
All right. You're going to go first because all you wrote in the rundown, you loser, was I have a story about my mom. Now, please don't let this be a sad story. That would be terrible. And I would sound like a horrible human being.
Well, turns out it's a little
my
bit.
My mom died.
I really should have put more info. I'm so sorry. We have new parts of the routine for Make Me Smart, and I got to start earlier. Anyway.
My story about my mom.
You
got to put these things in the rundown? That's not true.
No, that's not new. The other things that are new are making me come to the rundown later. It's my fault. It's my time management. Right. I'm on it. It's going to get way better.
All right.
My story about my mom is actually related to news about healthcare being back in the news.
Ah, yes.
This week about, you know,
the president says are we vote are they going to the elections? Yes.
After the election on the American the Affordable Care Act. And then there was a New York Times story today that said Americans borrowed $88 billion to pay for health care last year. And I had this conversation with my mom, who is a type 1 diabetic, and her household recently transitioned fully to Medicare. Her husband retired.
Oh, wow.
So it's sort of like it's a story about a lot of things I knew in chunks. But when they all came together as one narrative, I found pretty surprising, which was that, so they pay for, so now she's on Medicare, mm-hmm. and it's $200 a month. But it doesn't cover everything, so you have to buy supplemental Medicare.
Yes.
Which is another $400 a month.
Shush.
So, yeah. So it's $600 a month. And then Medicare, unlike the health insurance they had before, covers insulin and related elements mm-hmm. of being diabetic mm-hmm. in different amounts. And again, she's type 1. So this is not optional. Like, it's not optional mm-hmm. for a lot of people. But some people actually cut back on their insulin because they can't afford it.
Yeah.
That's not happening because her pancreas doesn't work. Different disease. So one of the things is that Medicare, for example, doesn't cover the testing strips that you use when you test your blood, which are like $140. And also that with this $600, there's drug coverage that encompasses part of the insulin costs, but there's something called a coverage gap. So when you hit like $5,000, when Medicare has contributed like $5,000 to the cost of your drugs, you fall into this donut hole where you're uncovered. And for some period of time, I guess until you hit some sort of emergency level, you have to pay fully out of pocket for your drugs. Now, it is March. Well, now it's April. But when she told me the story, it was March of 2019, and she's already hit the coverage gap.
Wow.
On insulin. And so her 90-day supply, the next 90-day supply of insulin that she buys, will cost her $800, not including the testing strips and all of the accessories that go along with this injection. And I want to go back and just say she alone is paying $600 for Medicare coverage that is still leaving her with essentially like a whole other Midwest rent payment for insulin.
Mm-hmm.
And when that one company that makes the insulin that costs so much is going to make the generic version of the insulin, people with Medicare won't be able to get it.
Wow.
Yep. So that's my story about my mom and healthcare and how it all came together in this like narrative that made me realize that this is not working. And also when you talk about cutting Medicare, like,
right.
What?
Right.
Anyway.
So now to contextualize that, right? The president is going to take the entire Affordable Care Act to court and wants to invalidate the entire thing. Post-haste, one imagines, and then has promised in the last couple of days that after the 2020 elections, he says lawmakers are going to vote on this. Lawmakers, by the way, Republicans in the Senate are like, really?
We'd rather not do that.
Because there's no plan right now. And so healthcare now will be, for like the second time in 10 years, an election issue, which is going to be sort of extraordinary.
And on top of that, this Gallup survey came out just today, as we are recording this episode on April 2nd, saying that Americans, I want to remind you, borrowed an estimated $88 billion over the last year to pay for healthcare, and that 27% of Democrats, 21% of Republicans, and 30% of independents had deferred treatment because of costs. And that something like 70% of respondents said there was no chance in HE double toothpicks that their elected officials were going to bring prices down.
Right. Right.
So it's definitely not getting better.
Yep.
The end.
All right. So we're going to do, this is going to be an awkward little transition, but I'm going to transition from Molly's mom and her type 1 diabetes and the terrible state of American healthcare coverage to a story about Brexit in a way. I was in the UK a week ago doing a bunch of Brexit coverage. And as we know, Brexit is a mess. And Parliament, even as we speak today on Tuesday, the 2nd, is trying to figure out what he's going to do. But yesterday in the House of Commons of the Parliament of the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland and Great Britain and whatever they officially call it, there were some protests. So there's this very serious debate going on about the future of the United Kingdom inside the European Union. And some climate change protesters got into the gallery. They stripped down to what looks like, and I'm just looking at the picture here, it looks like panties and G-strings, perhaps, or athletic supporters of some kind. They're up in the balcony, and there's a glass wall separating the balcony from the actual floor of Parliament. And these protesters, climate change protesters, they glued their buttocks and their hands to the glass wall separating everything. So now you have this existential debate about the economic future of the United Kingdom going on with buttocks pressed up against the glass up in the gallery. And I would just encourage everybody to Google it because it's a fun little chuckle. And
but like not at work because no. I clicked that. Don't okay, do well, it at work
because so
I clicked the link.
Oh, man.
And those of you who are watching the video will see that I was visibly blushing after
so anyway,
clicking this link. The story is amazing, though.
Can I turn this monitor around? Anyway, no, I can't. Sorry to the camera people.
It's okay. I'm sure we can get some B-roll of that photo.
But it's a nice little chuckle in the midst of the tragedy that is Brexit, and that's all I got. That's where we are.
Do you want to tell us anything about your visit?
I guess the only thing is that people over there are
just... on Marketplace.
Yes,
but...
of course. Everybody listen. People are just they're just pissed. Whether they're leavers or they're remainers, they are so angry with their government. They are so frustrated that their elected representatives cannot figure out what to do about this. And it doesn't. They don't care if it's the PM. They don't care if it's Jeremy Corbyn on Labour. They're just irritated and angry and so sick and tired of it. We went out and tried to find some protesters down around Parliament, and they're just feeble. They're just standing there going, no Brexit. Leave means leave. Please. And you know, waving these flags that are like tattered and, you know, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious about your opinion on this, and you don't have to give it if you don't want to, but do you think that it was a lose-lose for Theresa May anybody
totally
who was
a lose-lose?
I mean, it's like...
Now look, she made it a lot worse, right? She kicked off the Article 50 process the 2 years leading up to the 29th of March of this year. She kicked it off without a plan. She just started the clock running, right? And it's statutory and it's in European treaties. Mm. And so when she said, I have begun the Article 50 process without a plan, everybody went, you did what? Right?
I see.
So that's one thing. And then the other thing is, and this is just, she was in a terrible spot. She was in a terrible spot. The country's divided. Yep. The parties are divided. Her party is divided. It's just a mess. And, you know, look, she took the job because the men actually who could have conceivably been in the running knocked each other out in the, you know, 2016-ish timeframe so that she wound up being the prime minister and having to lead into a general election in 2017. Horrible mess. Terrible mess.
Wow.
Lose deal.
Yeah. You should go, if you have not, you should go back and listen to the voices on the ground because they do sound weary, baffled. Helpless, nihilistic. Right. I mean, it really is like remarkable to hear. And then the reasons that people give, and then the recognition that like Brexit's not going to turn back the clock on globalization. I mean, there's some really profound stuff in there.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Anyway, go back and listen. It's on the website, marketplace.org. Y'all's turn. Here we go.
Hi, Kai and Molly.
This is Brent in Detroit.
This is Rebecca from Baltimore.
It was great to hear comments on my question about GDPR.
I wanted to put in my vote.
I want to discuss a slightly different but maybe related thing.
So we're going to keep going a little bit with taxes. A couple of weeks ago, I asked y'all how you're feeling about your taxes, whether you might be interested in paying more for more or better social programs, which is obviously a huge problem in this economy because Americans don't like to pay for what they want from the government. Andy Patton lives in rural southwest Wisconsin. He said if we adopted Medicare for all, he would be happy to pay more in taxes. Here's why. His wife had to see a specialist for some diagnostic tests, and here's the rest of it.
Those additional tests and the consult cost more than $3,000. Now, we're on a payment plan. Yay! Uh-huh. The thing is, we don't want anything for free, nor do we expect it. But paying for health insurance we can't afford to use sucks, and it's kind of scary. So, if it means paying $1,000 per month more in taxes instead of health insurance premiums, to have the peace of mind of knowing that if something happens to me, we'll be able to carry on, well, then call me a socialist.
Oh, snap. There's that word.
Dang.
Good thing we did a program on that. You know.
But
it's
also,
really
yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, it's because, it's, you know, interestingly, it's sort of like the taxes conversation overall. It's like, do you want it to be predictable?
Right.
And do you want to just know as opposed to getting hit with something super unexpected? Sure, we should all be saving for the unexpected, but our houses cost too much.
Right.
That was me literally channeling my financial advisor. Hey, Joe. Sorry, bud.
Joe, the financial advisor. Hello, Joe.
He knows that he probably texted me just now. Knock it off. Several of you have already written to us on how the new tax law has affected you this year. Listener AJ sent us this voice memo.
Earlier in the year, when you know you're most likely going to get some sort of a tax refund, you tend to file early, January, February, and get ready for your tax refund. However, in this circumstance, a lot of my friends and coworkers actually ended up having to pay a large sum back. But do you feel like this could impact the economy in any which way? Thank you. Love listening to you guys. Bye.
Love you, man.
Love you too, buddy.
So look, as I said earlier, right, a lot of Americans use that $500, $1,000, $1,500 refund to buy a new washer dryer or to fix the roof. And now those expenditures won't happen. It's not like the money's not entering the economy, but if you're getting $100 extra a month because your withholding has changed, you're going to spend that in different ways than if you had $1,500 to go buy, a new bed that you need desperately or whatever it is. So it's just, it's a different way of spending the money, which will show up in different ways.
So is it possible that this is a huge causation correlation leap, but is it possible that the sort of unexpected drop in like consumer confidence and spending in March?
Oh, I'm not going
could
there.
Be related I'm not to the there. Lack of all I'm, the, okay.
Sure. Is it possible? Sure. But you know, if frogs had wings, they wouldn't bump their butts on the ground, you know, so.
Oh, I just, can we pause while I write that down? Because sure. That is, oh wait, if. I can just listen to the show again.
Oh, look, it's already recorded. I don't even have to. Oh, my goodness. All right.
I'm getting my post-it while you read about this next one.
Here's Katrina Jones sent us this about fighting the tax lobbying groups. This sort of goes to what we were talking about with Marielle. Here you go.
My question stems from my most recent research on filing my own taxes this year and discovering that the Obama administration proposed automatic tax filing, which would have resulted in more efficiencies for the government and efficiencies for the taxpayer. I was horrified to hear that Intuit and H&R Block effectively lobbied against this proposal and killed an initiative that would save Americans time and money. I'm even more angry at the legislators who allowed this to happen. I also wonder what other proposals met similar fates for similar reasons.
Yeah, so a lot of other proposals met similar fates for similar reasons. We're going to put a link on our website to a Vox story
about
lobbying and all that jazz. Yeah, but look, here's the deal. Welcome to American democratic capitalism. That's kind of the way it goes. And it doesn't mean it's not terrible, and I'm not making a value judgment here, but that's the system. That's the system, right? And corporations have First Amendment rights where they can speak in favor of or opposed to certain policies, and they can speak with their money, and that's what they do.
Yep. But I like that my growl scared you a little bit, just like a little, because it is absolutely ridiculous. You know what it is? It's like I have this thing I like to call rage Spock, where the illogicality of something enrages me. And this is one of those things where it's just like, there's no, that is totally illogical. It makes no sense.
Yep.
And then I remember that dollars talk.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. It is now. And sometimes that is all the sense, no pun intended, that you need. It is time for the Make Me Smart question. That question, of course, what's something you thought you knew and you later found out you were wrong about? One of our listeners from Hong Kong sent us this voice memo.
Hi, Kai and Molly. I am Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
And I have enjoyed listening to One Fun Kai since I was a student in the back of my parents' car. I used to believe the job of a teacher was to teach. I was wrong. I now know the job of a teacher is to ensure student learning. This has shifted what happens in my classroom away from activities designed by me to a class where my students write lesson plans, design experiments, teach each other, and even write their own exams.
Whoa, wait, what?
Now I only step in when I'm needed. Thank you for helping us learn.
That's awesome. And it's cool that the Hong Kong public school system lets him do that because, you know, I don't think, PS 101 in Hoboken, New Jersey is going to let somebody be really creative like that. I could be wrong. And if you're from PS 101 in Hoboken, New Jersey, please write me and tell me. But that's kind of cool.
I love that.
Also, it made me feel really old.
That's the anti-Common Core. Oh, God, I know. Yeah.
Since he was a kid listening in the back of his parents' car. Shut up, Daniel. Why are you?
Maybe he was a grad student.
Riding in the back of his parents' car. Yes, I'm going with that. That's what I'm going with. I'm done.
Roll with it. And I like that, though. That is a really profound lesson that I think also applies to like parenting and management.
Yep.
So many things where it's like, oh, turns out it's not about me and all the stuff I know. It's about you getting smarter. Right. I didn't really mean to make that a brand thing, but it was.
No, but look, and it's really counter to a lot of people's behavior in certain settings. You know, it's just that's
Anyway. Yeah.
So
great answer.
Yes, great answer. Speaking of which, next week is all about answers. We're doing another explain-a-thon. Remember those? It's been
a while.
Anyway,
it's been a while.
Yeah, and we're going to do a whole episode answering all y'all's questions.
Yeah, the explain-a-thon, in case you are somewhat new to the show and don't remember them from the past, we dedicate an entire episode to kind of trying to lightning round answer your questions.
Yes.
So if you have them, burning questions about tech, the economy, I don't know, maybe culture, why not? Send us a voice memo.
Sure.
Because it's in the tagline, like, bring it on. Captain Marvel, let's do this.
What'd you think of Captain Marvel, by the way? Have we talked about this yet?
Oh, God, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I'm so embarrassed. I haven't seen it yet.
What kind of loser are you, Molly Wood?
I don't know. I don't even know me anymore. Like, I have no
excuse.
But
I thought you were all like superhero and this and that. And
I am. I know. But I'm not so good at leaving the house all the time. It's a thing.
I think so much less of you.
Anyway, just edit that out because, yes, my nerd cred just went through the floor.
Oh, man. All right. So what you got to do
is
send us your questions, which would be the first one of which should be, Molly, how could you not have seen Captain Marvel yet? Make me smart at marketplace.org is where you send them. Oh, my goodness.
I know. It's so bad. It's so bad.
It's terrible. Make Me Smart is produced by Sharon Morris. The senior producer is Eve Tro. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. This week's program was engineered by, I have to look. Yes, it is. Daniel Ramirez. I got to check all the time because sometimes, I get tripped up. Theme music was composed by Daniel Ramirez and Bent Holliday.
The executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves, who I think might have started listening to the end of the show.
Senior Vice President and
General Manager Deborah Clark, who I think maybe not. We have to discuss our hashtag because apparently EOTP also is like something, some sort of any means possible. Anyway, it shows up in bad places. So we've decided it should be, the hashtag is End of the Pod Club. So EOTP Club. That's key for the End of the Pod Club.
Oh, my God. I wonder what, now I have to go look up what EOTP is.
I can't remember, but it's not good.
Not on a work computer. Just butts in Parliament.
Right.
That's all.
There's too many butts already on that computer.
Oh, man.
It's the glue that really got me. Part about the glue.
Yes, they glued their butts to the glass.
Windows.
I just can't. I don't even know.
Do you think they waxed before they?
Oh, okay,
too many questions.
And we're out.